Facebook has revealed yet another privacy issue after the social media company said it had collected the email contacts of 1.5 million new users without their consent. The tech giant late Wednesday admitted that since May 2016, the email contacts were unintentionally uploaded to Facebook when new users verified their accounts with their email passwords.
The heavyweights of the global auto industry are launching new models and futuristic concept cars, with many now designed just for the Chinese auto market. China's biggest auto show is underway this week in Shanghai. But the glitz and glamour fall under the shadow of a Chinese economic slowdown and a trade war between Washington and Beijing that's stretching into its second year. Recent data has revealed auto sales shrinking for the first time since the 1990s. Companies like GM are now also targeting buyers in regional China with less money to spend than people living in the bigger cities like Beijing.
The special counsel's investigation also examined Russian efforts to publish stolen emails and documents on the internet. Under applicable law, publication of these types of material would not be criminal unless the publisher also participated in the underlying hacking conspiracy. In other words, there was no evidence of the Trump campaign collusion with the Russian government's hacking.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's April the 19th. It's 5:10 in the morning. And here we are with another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day getting underway for some of us. It is a market holiday around the world for Good Friday, but we've got the broadcast this morning on the air, and Paul Nolte is with us today, as he is every Friday from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. We're going to go over some economic news and some market data in a minute, talk about our portfolios a little bit later in the program. Brian Summers is here as well today from Skift.com, one of our Friday regulars, and we're going to talk to Brian about United playing hardball with Expedia and maybe some rising airfares as we move through the summer. And that'll be at about 5:38 this morning. Plus the latest news, weather, traffic, sports, all of that's coming up this hour. So stay with us for the Opening Bell Friday edition. Let's begin first on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The trading week winds down on Wall Street as investors reacted yesterday to some positive financial news. Retail sales posted their biggest gain since last late September, and there were better-than-expected earnings from Honeywell and United Rentals. The Dow Jones Industrials up 110 points for the day. As I mentioned, markets closed in many places today for the Good Friday holiday, including the United States and Europe. Markets ending the day mixed in Asia. The Nikkei up nearly 0.5%, 110 points. The Hang Seng down nearly 161 points, 0.5%. The Shanghai up more than 0.5% this morning. So some of the markets there in Asia still working today, but the big ones closed for the Good Friday holiday. Some news happening this morning. Pier 1 Imports plans to close more stores. The struggling home decor retailer says it could shutter as many as 145 locations after reporting disappointing fourth quarter results. Pier 1 closed 30 stores in the fiscal year that ended in March. This news follows Bed Bath & Beyond's announcement last week that it'll close up to 40 stores this year. Pier 1 operates about 970 stores nationwide. This is probably good news for the Targets of the world as people look for places to buy home goods as these two stores start trimming down. Tesla CEO Elon Musk and the Securities Exchange Commission asking a federal judge to push back a deadline for a resolution to their latest trade dispute. Earlier this month, the judge set deadline 2 weeks for the two sides to work out their differences. The SEC asked the judge to hold Musk in contempt for allegedly violating a settlement. Both sides reported that they have made progress and believe that they can come to an understanding given an extra week. Let's begin front and center this morning. Paul Nolte is here. Paul's an SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager at Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. And Paul's one of our regular Friday guests today. In today on the holiday, Paul, happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you. Good morning.
We appreciate you coming down today.
It was a little easier drive than usual, so it was not too bad to make it down here today.
And the announcement that you have somewhere in the radio station hidden 3 shares of Boeing stock in an Easter egg.
Or Tesla, one of the two.
Apple, we'd tear the place apart for some Apple stock. So what was the big news of the week?
Well, you know, it was really a busy week from a news perspective. And when you take a look at how the week finished for the markets, they were essentially flat. The S&P was down slightly on the week. But we're now in the middle of the earnings season. A lot of earnings numbers, the expectations were not all that high. Many companies did a pretty good job of beating those lower estimates. But in many cases, a lot of the companies were talking about the an okay going forward look at their business. Notably, as you mentioned at the opening montage, the Honeywell, some of the industrial stocks actually did very well and actually raised some guidance. The economic data continues to be kind of mushy. You know, we did get very good retail sales, but again, coming off of a very low mark earlier, the industrial production, some of the capacity, manufacturing numbers, especially in Europe, were not all that great. The markets didn't seem to pay too much attention to that. And then, of course, we had all the political stuff going on in the background as well. So from that perspective, there was a lot to keep investors, you know, looking around at a lot of different things.
Yeah, nice to, though, have a couple of days off here, though, to sort of sit back and regroup and watch what's going on in the world. I was surprised yesterday the markets didn't react at all to the Mueller report.
And it's not a surprise from our perspective because, again, the markets are really much more concerned about the economy, earnings, corporations, and what they're all doing. So a lot of what was going on with the Mueller report is a noise for the markets. There really wasn't even much of a move once it came public. Again, the economy and global markets, the global economy and corporate earnings are really front and center, and that's really what Wall Street focuses on.
You know, and a lot of people, you know, if you talk to investors and traders and farmers, the first thing they'll say is, what's the deal with China?
Mm-hmm.
Is that any closer? China actually had some improving economic news this week.
They have done a very good job the first quarter of tossing an awful lot of money into their economy. So they've kind of gone through their own quantitative easing, if you will, and it's starting to show up in the numbers. They're starting to see their GDP number pick up a little bit. They're starting to see their economic activity and their sales numbers pick up. And so what that does is it gives them a little bit more strength when it comes to negotiating the trade deal with the United States. They're operating, at least going into the first quarter, operating from a point of weakness because their economy was slowing down fairly dramatically. That has turned around some, so that gives them at least a little bit more firepower when they're coming to the table. And we've been dangled now that they're going to meet, Trump and Xi will meet the end of May, early June, which leads everybody to believe that we may finally get a trade deal sometime at the end of May, early June in the markets here. So, and again, even that announcement that came out earlier this week really didn't move markets much. And I think the markets have kind of listened to it and said, yep, we've heard this many, many times before. We'll believe it when it finally actually happens.
Yeah, the boy who cried wolf one too many times, perhaps.
About 12, 13 times now, I think, right. Yes.
I want to come back to the United States. Jamie Dimon, the head of J.P. Morgan Chase this week, said he thinks that the economy has several more years of energy in it, that the economic growth is going to continue. Is that overly optimistic, or is there something to that?
There may be something to that. You know, certainly with the Fed on pause right now, it's given at least the equity market certainly new life. The economy is growing. If you look at a lot of the numbers that are coming out from the various regional Feds and some economists' estimates, we're probably growing in the 1.5 to 2% range in the first quarter, maybe a little bit above that in the second quarter. As long as the Fed stays on the sidelines, and I think that's the assumption that Jamie might be working off of, as long as they're on the sidelines, the economy can continue to do reasonably well. But that being said, you have to take a look at what corporations are doing with their profits. In a lot of cases, a lot of those companies are getting dinged for reinvesting back in the company. A lot of the shareholders are much more interested in stock buybacks and dividend increases and not so much for companies reinvesting in added capacity, et cetera. So it'll be kind of interesting to see how this all plays out, but it's a very different market than, you know, over the last 50, 75 years where companies would reinvest in their businesses to grow their businesses. Now it's all about returning money to shareholders.
It was interesting to see yesterday. I know we talked earlier about the U.S.-China trade talks and that issue. The International Trade Commission released a study report yesterday on the expected impact of the new U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement, the NAFTA 2, said it would boost the economy by about a third, or about $68 billion, and add 176,000 jobs 6 years after it takes effect. Said that it would be a modest impact on the economy. So not where the Trump administration wanted it to be, but still pretty good.
No, it is a positive, and you know, it's elimination of some of those uncertainties that we had going in. There still are tariffs on steel and aluminum, so there is some impact on the auto manufacturers, and that was highlighted, I believe, in the report. But again, it's a long-term impact. It's not one of those benefits that we're going to see the next day. And it's one of the things that we've been talking about with the China Accord is whenever that gets done, it's going to be at least 6 months to a year before we start to see what those impacts are going to be on trade. We're just now seeing some of the impacts of kind of not the lockup of trade, but certainly all the trade talks that we've been going on now for the last year and a half and what some of those impacts are. Certainly, we saw it in the trade numbers this week, in the fact that our actual trade deficit getting better. And the reason for that was because when the trade tariffs were first announced, everybody started to buy a ton of stuff to build inventories, and we're seeing it in the inventory numbers, but now that's kind of dissipated. So I've bought everything that I need, and I'm good now for the next 6 months, a year, whatever. So I don't need to buy anything more. And that's actually one of the reasons for the improvement in the trade numbers.
One of the other things from this report, and this is for consumers to be aware of, found that the new agreement is going to modestly raise the price of U.S. cars and reduce car sales. It's going to actually create more of a living wage for auto makers and auto plant employees, both here and in Mexico. Mm-hmm. So that might be coming a little higher car price, but maybe worth it.
And that's one of the things that I think is at the heart of the trade deal, not only with Canada and Mexico, but also with China, is an effort in the long run, an effort to bring some manufacturing back to the United States. In talking to some of my clients who are involved in U.S. manufacturing, very small businesses in the United States, they have to source a lot of their stuff internationally. 30, 40 years ago, that was not the case. So they're looking to bring that stuff back to the United States in some regard. Again, we're not bringing back hundreds of steel plants and that type of manufacturing, but some of it is starting to make its way back to the United States, and we're seeing it in some of the demands for U.S. Steel production and other items from the United States. So that is having a modest impact, but again, it takes a very long time to build all that plant and equipment and to bring that all online. It's a story, I think, that's going to unfold over the next 5 to 10 years as opposed to the next 5 to 10 weeks.
Yeah, and if this agreement makes the salary pretty much similar in these other countries, you're less likely to take your work there to get a cheaper labor.
Right. And the other part of it too is, again, you know, from when we look at the wages in the United States, it boosts the overall income level of the workers in the United States. And again, spending and all of the rest of it that follows when those workers are making a lot more money than what they would have been making somewhere else.
What do you like here at the end of the week?
You know, at the end of the week, we're still looking at the equity markets to us look a little bit tired. We've had a really good run since Christmas, but the international markets, I think, still look good. As much as we've been talking about how bad Europe looks, a lot of the companies that are there, again, multinational companies like Nestle and Unilever and those types of companies, are actually doing very well. And so just because they're domiciled outside the United States doesn't mean they're not good investments. So we're looking at much more away from the United States as a lot of those companies are undervalued. So we still do like the international markets. The rest of the markets, I think, are there. We've been calling for at least a little bit of a rest. And this week, I think, qualifies as a very little rest. The S&P down less than a quarter of 1%. But I think we will probably see the markets move sideways here over the next couple of weeks. So it's not a bad time to kind of sit back and take a look at your 401k, how the allocation is. Is it appropriate? What happens to your portfolio if the markets drop 10 to 15%? Is it something that you're going to lose sleep over? And if the answer is yes, then it's probably time to do a little bit of rebalancing and moving some of that money away from the equities, which have had a great run, and move a little bit more toward fixed income and put some of that money in some safer areas of the market.
Good advice, Paul. How can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one conversation if they want?
Well, I'll be actually working a little bit today, so they can always drop me an email, and the email address is pnolte@kingsviewam.com, and happy to continue that conversation.
All right. Have a good weekend. Happy Easter, and we'll see you again next Friday.
And happy Easter. Thank you.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul's SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager at Kingsview Asset Management.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Airfare may be going up over the summer. And United taking up the fight against Expedia. Both big stories this morning. We want to talk to Brian Summers about our regular Friday conversation. Brian is Senior Aviation Business Editor for Skift and joins us via Skype from Los Angeles this morning. Brian, let's start first with airfare report that some of the airfare could be going up. We could see higher fares this summer, and it could be partly to blame on the 737 MAX grounding.
Yeah, Steve, I feel like I'm beginning to sound like a broken record on this. I'm not surprised to see that reports that airfares may go up in the summer. Lots of people know this. I say it all the time. Airfares are a function of supply and demand. So when airlines put more seats into the market, when they're selling more seats, prices tend to go down. When they're selling fewer seats, prices go up. Airlines aren't necessarily out to gouge people. But folks know that the 737 MAX is not flying. A lot of the airlines say, you know what, it may not fly all summer. So they're going to be flying fewer seats this summer than they expected. Demand in the summer for air travel is just sky high, right? The kids are out of school. People want to go on vacation. The weather is nice. And, you know, there are going to be fewer seats for sale. There are going to be more people competing for fewer seats, and prices are going to go up. Airlines aren't bad actors. They're not trying to take advantage of anyone. It's just kind of the way it goes. It's not good, but it happens.
I know some of the airlines, including United, have been talking about their growth and revenue estimates for the year. Is there anything to extrapolate from some of those figures about how high fares might increase this summer?
It's really not, Steve. And a lot of this stuff is just market dependent. You know, maybe an airline was flying five times a day from Chicago to Miami because they have a MAX out of service. They're only going to be flying four times a day from Chicago to Miami. Fewer seats in the market. Fares tend to go up because you have the same number of passengers who want those seats. I don't think that the fare increases are going to be astronomical. Maybe a few percent, maybe not on every route. It takes a while before these sorts of things shake out. So the MAX is one thing. The other thing is that people may notice the difference, say, when they're going to Europe. There are slightly fewer airlines flying transatlantic right now. People may know that WOW Air went out of business recently, and they were flying from the United States to Iceland and then from Iceland to Europe. So fewer seats flying from the United States to Europe means that fares could rise slightly higher on transatlantic routes.
Yeah, and this is a good problem to have, I think. We are still in a strong economy, lots of people planning to travel this summer, so the demand is up. That's a good problem to have, isn't it?
Well, it's certainly a good problem to have if you're an airline or an airline investor. It's probably not as great as if you're a traveler, but these things tend to sort themselves out. And you know what, Steve, if you want a deal, I mean, the good news about supply and demand is demand really falls right after Labor Day into September. Your kids are back in school, whatever. So if you're looking for a deal, you know, look for September. Don't look for early August. You just have to be you have to take this sort of thing seriously.
Another story, and this is sort of a follow-up to a conversation we had a couple weeks ago about United Airlines and its relationship with Expedia. There's a little bit of hardball going on here, isn't there?
Yeah, Steve, it's kind of interesting. You know, United was down on its luck for a while, and it wasn't just about customer service. The whole corporate structure was kind of busted. The airline wasn't as sophisticated or aggressive as it could be. And about 3 years ago, a new management team came in, and they're pretty smart, and they've been playing hardball with some of their vendors. So one of the vendors that they're playing hardball with is Expedia. Lots of people buy tickets on Expedia Group websites because it's not just Expedia, it's also Travelocity, it's also Orbitz. United says that in September, at the end of September, they're going to cut off Expedia's access to its fares. United hasn't exactly said what the problem was, but there's some sort of contractual dispute, and United says, you know what, Expedia, we don't need you. We can sell our fares directly to consumers. Folks out there don't know whether this is posturing or if it's serious. United sounds deadly serious to me, so I think it's possible in October, November, you won't be able to buy United's fares on Expedia, but we're going to have to wait and see. So that's one thing. Another thing is United is also playing hardball with JP Morgan Chase. That's the bank that issues the United co-branded credit card. I think they call it the Mileage Plus Explorer. These bank relationships are worth major money to airlines. It was the last United management team that negotiated the current contract with Chase. And the new United management says, you know, this contract is not lucrative enough for us. The new United management team says, you know, Delta just got a gigantic contract from American Express, and we want something similar. People may know United and Chase have had a relationship going back a very long time, well before the merger with Continental. I think for that reason, lots of people following this think that United and Chase will reach a deal, so Chase will continue issuing United Airlines credit cards. But right now, it looks like the two companies are locked in some pretty rich negotiations.
Yeah, we'll stay tuned to that. Another story out there, and this is one of your stories from the week, Delta Airlines reducing the seat incline, hoping to make passengers happy. What are they doing?
Yeah, this was a funny one. Happened last week. Delta Airlines said that they were going to reduce seat recline on 62 airplanes. These are Airbus A320s that generally fly routes of about 2 hours or so. Right now, they recline about 4 inches in coach. In the future, they're going to recline 2 inches in coach. Delta says that this is pretty much just a test. They're going to see if it works well. If it does, it might roll out to more airplanes. If it doesn't, they may decide to roll it back. Delta spins this as a customer-friendly move, and believe it or not, I kind of agree with it. Delta isn't adding more seats to the plane. They're not changing anything else. But they say, you know, look, people are complaining that they can't watch TV or they can't eat because they're always worried about somebody reclining into their lap. There's probably no reason to still have 4 inches of recline. And Delta thinks that customers will be happier with this new standard of recline. We're going to have to see what happens, though.
Yeah, it's interesting. I know we had before had a conversation about how just a couple of inches with the seat spacing and that sort of thing makes a huge difference. It's hard to imagine that 2 inches is going to be a big deal.
No, I think it will be, though. You know, there's lots of people out there that are, say, watching TV on the in-seat screens. They're also trying to eat. And then out of nowhere, somebody reclines, not just a little bit, not just an inch or two, but, you know, 4 inches almost into your lap. People hate that. I do have to make a confession. I probably shouldn't do this on the radio, Steve, but I am a recliner. I always have been. I don't tend to mind when people recline into me, and I like to recline. But I've learned by reporting this story that this makes me an outlier, and I guess people don't like me because I'm a recliner.
Well, hopefully this will be settled with a couple of inches here or there. And if it works with Delta, I'm guessing other airlines are going to be watching this closely.
Yeah, I bet other airlines will be watching this closely. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Another story out there, and I know we've talked too about this before, but the food on airlines, you have a really cool story about how airlines are deciding what we eat and drink.
Yeah, Steve, a couple of weeks ago, I went to Hamburg, Germany, and I covered one of the biggest trade shows of the year for airlines. It was actually about aircraft catering, and there were two giant convention halls, and basically there were so many companies out there that wanted to sell whatever they were making to airlines. So they had beers, they had wine, they had champagne, they had cheese, they had jams, just all these small companies out there that really believe, you know what, if we could get an airline contract, this would be so huge for the company. Interestingly, Steve, one of the companies that was there was this company called Dalemans. Dalemans is a Dutch company, and they make the stroopwafel. If people are listening and they fly United Airlines a lot, they may know about the stroopwafel. About 3 years ago, United was looking for new free snacks in economy class, and this company, Dalemans, wanted to expand in the United States. So United and Dalemans, they struck up a partnership, and so now you get the stroopwafels on board the airline. This is like a best case scenario if you're a company that makes food, right? Because nobody had heard of the stroopwafel in the United States, and now you eat them. You eat millions of them on United every year. And I guess, you know, Dalemans, the company, tells me people are actually buying these, right? They're going to Target, they're going to Walmart, they're going to a grocery store, and they're asking for the stroopwafel, a snack that nobody had ever heard of until it was on United Airlines. So again, there's like, convention halls filled with all these companies that hope that they can be the next stroopwafel. The sad part is, you know, most of them are never going to get an airline contract, but for the few that do, it's a big deal. And I have to tell you, just as a personal aside, it is a lot of fun to go to this trade show because you get to sample absolutely everything. So it's the type of thing that you want to go to if you're hungry.
Yeah, and one of the things that's featured in one of your stories is something called farmhouse biscuits. Is this going to be the new stroopwafel, do you think?
Steve, I don't think so. Farmhouse Biscuits is a UK company, and I gave them a bit of a hard time, right? Because they call a biscuit is actually what we would call a cookie. The cookies were delicious. I went over there and I sampled one. They really want to get an airline contract. One problem that this company has is, I guess, lots of people buy these cookies around the Christmas season. But in the first quarter of the year, their factories are pretty much empty. There's not a lot going on. And they think that if they get an airline contract, the factory will be buzzing in the first quarter and it's going to help the whole year's profits. I wish them the best of luck. I'm just not sure that an airline is going to buy a farmhouse biscuit.
All right, Brian, good conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Brian Summers is Senior Aviation Business Editor for Skift.com. That's at Skift on Twitter. And also follow Brian, too, at Brian Summers. And make sure you sign up for the weekly Skift Airline Innovation Report at skift.com/airline.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, a market holiday for a lot of folks around the world today, including here in the United States. As we look at markets in Asia, the day is going to end mixed for those markets, with the Nikkei ending higher by about 0.5%, the Hang Seng down by 0.5%, the Shanghai up by 0.5%, up and down mixed markets. Everything else is pretty much closed for the Good Friday holiday. A couple of more stories here before we leave you this morning. Sears is suing its former CEO Eddie Lambert and the Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin for alleged thefts of billions of dollars from the retailer. Sears, as you know, filed for bankruptcy in October after years of losses under Lambert, who was then its chairman, CEO, and largest shareholder. The lawsuit accuses Lambert and Mnuchin of allegedly stealing billions of dollars from the once storied retailer. A good day for Zoom video conferencing stockholders yesterday. Shares of the San Jose software company gained more than 70% in its debut on the NASDAQ. Zoom offers HD video conferencing, phone systems, and other communication tools for businesses. Potheads have for decades celebrated the love for marijuana on April 20th, known as 420 Day, but the once counterculture celebration that was all about getting stoned is so mainstream now that corporate America is starting to get involved. Businesses inside and outside of the multi-billion dollar cannabis industry are using April 20th tomorrow to roll out marketing and social media messaging aimed at connecting with marijuana enthusiasts. Tomorrow, Lyft is an example, offering a $4.20 credit on a single ride in Colorado, where marijuana is legal, and in select cities in the U.S. and Canada. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, housing starts for March. Lead off today's outlook, home builders expect a strong recovery from February, which was the biggest decline since June. Building industry analysts forecasting a 6.5% raise increase to an annual rate of 1.23 million of units for housing starts. The only thing on our calendar today, as the markets are closed again for the Good Friday holiday on this Friday, April the 19th.